everybody. Welcome to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and summer is over, which means it's time for one of my favorite shows of the year, F This Summer. I love doing this show because I get to do this show with Doug.
Please call me Battleship for the rest of the show.
I get to do this show with Battleship.
Woo, woo!
And JB.
And I'm afraid I'm going to be very distracted tonight because I'm still rolling around how delightful Dark Shadows was. I roll every individual horror around on my tongue.
We will get to Dark Shadows. You can find our website at fthismovie.net.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, that's right. You heard me, Battleship. fthismovie.net.
Oh my God.
How's that go down?
Just got real.
Progress, Governor.
And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us in the iTunes store, but remember to find all of our episodes, you have to go to fthismovie.net.
.net?
Just don't be indifferent or apathetic. That's no way to go through life.
If you like our show and you're so inclined, leave us a good review in iTunes. It helps raise our visibility and it'll help other people find the show. And it'll just make the party bigger. Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Back me
Bring more to the party.
Back me up,
Bring
Battleship.
More. Is that the expression? You're bringing more, you're...
We are bringing the party to them.
So today we're talking
By the way,
about,
not if you're inclined. Yeah. Just do it. Just even if you've left a review before, just leave another one.
I don't
one.
Think you can.
Well, try it.
Everybody
try
has
it.
One unique Apple
you
ID. Because
try.
Pre-crime, minority report.
Six sticks?
Yeah, we are... we're talking about this summer... This is our third time doing this. The website's only been around for a little bit over 2 years, but this is our third summer recap
how
podcast.
How long has fthismovie.net been around for?
How long is The Good Wife? It's like an hour, right? Okay, we've been around for about an hour. I measure everything in
Good Wives.
In Good Wives. So.
That sounds like something from the Puritan day. And I'll need some fencing.
So
the length of six goodly wives.
In the past summer shows, we've spent a lot of time just being like, bam, I don't like this summer. This summer was stupid. And I don't want to do that this year, even if I thought this summer was stupid. So I'm trying to figure out a different way to frame the summer of 2012. What I've come up with is it's all about expectations. If you're excited to see something, it's usually bad. And if you have no expectations for something, Snow White and the Huntsman, you're like, well, that was a pleasant surprise.
Paranorman was pretty charming.
Tastefully done. I'm sorry it ruined a relationship. But I got so much enjoyment. Premium Rush.
I like when they say the title in the movie.
Me too.
It's like, this one's a Premium Rush.
Yeah, I like when she's like, I'm Snow White, the Huntsman. It's weird that she calls him that. But
back up. What relationship did the film end?
Oh, mine and my wife's. Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to be relevant on after this movie. People listen to this for gossip.
That's gossip, and I consider none of that my business.
Patrick is Gawker.
So let's talk about this summer.
It's interesting you said expectations, because sitting down with the list this afternoon, I broke the summer up into yay.
Okay.
Ugh. And meh.
Okay. Give me one from each.
Okay. I think all three of us would agree.
Yes.
Probably.
Right. Moving on.
Wait, hold on. Let him finish. Let him
right,
finish.
You're right.
I can't read your minds yet.
Precog.
You say that like it's such a swear word.
You precog.
Filthy precog.
Yes. Filthy, filthy word. One of the yays was The Avengers.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Part of the... I mean, it's great. The Avengers was a lot of fun. Not perfect, as we said over and over again, but... you know, the summer is blockbuster season, and so every week you're going to see this new big special effects movie that costs $300 million, and you want them all to be fun and entertaining, and very few of them were. The Avengers was more so than any of them,
yes.
And the problem with that is it was the first movie of the summer. It literally came out the first week of May.
It feels like such a long time ago.
Months where it's just like, oh, this isn't good.
Much like you could... demark the end of summer with a certain Piranha movie. I consider the Avengers the beginning of the summer, yeah. And very, very entertaining. In fact, so far this year, there's only three movies that I've gone back to see again.
Okay.
Maybe to check to see my original. And one of them was the Avengers. And I think I actually enjoyed the Avengers more the second time.
Yeah.
When not knowing what it was going to be wasn't any longer
okay.
Me speaking English than other words put, mouth make, that Tippy Canoe and Tyler too.
Okay, what's a meh?
I only have one meh.
Only one for the whole summer?
Because I'm so bitter, they're all in the other category. My meh, all right. And I wonder if it has something to do with the Avengers,
yeah.
Is The Dark Knight Rises.
Okay.
Have expectations ever been higher?
That's part of the problem, right?
For motion picture? And certainly part of the problem was I'm a big fan of The Dark Knight. I think that film does a whole bunch of stuff really well. And as you have said on this very podcast, Dark Knight Rises is kind of a mess.
And I know that there are people who have gone Stop to right see there. That.
Are these people pre-cons?
Who've gone to see that movie 10 times. Like, The Dark Knight Rises lives on in the minds of these people. But I feel like when The Dark Knight came out, it was a phenomenon that lasted the whole summer, that we were all living in the shadow of that movie. And The Dark Knight Rises came out, and it was a big deal for a week, maybe two.
Yeah.
And it sort of seems to be forgotten.
That's how I felt.
Yeah.
I actually saw it later. You had seen it open. You guys saw it opening weekend, I assume.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was out of town. I missed it opening weekend, and I saw it. I didn't see it the next weekend. I saw it two weekends later.
All right.
And again, based upon expectations, and I was like, I can't wait for this movie. I loved the previous two movies. It was such a weird phenomenon after talking to you specifically, and I listened to the podcast also about you should, but if you haven't listened to it yet, you should listen to the Dark Knight Rises podcast with Mike, right?
Yeah.
And it was kind of the bubble, not, I don't use cliches, but the bubble burst, and it's kind of like, well, I guess I don't need to rush out and see it right away, because I did see it, and I was entertained by it, but my whole take on it was, well, it's about time this whole thing ended. Like, this trilogy is nice in a nice that. Little bow, yeah, because it's right. done.
And I was just going to ask if you saw it at the Patio, which is the theater in Chicago we've all referenced many times, but you didn't see it at the Patio. Right now, as we speak, it's at the Patio.
Right.
And I almost feel like going back just to see it on that screen.
I, all summer, intended to go back and see it in IMAX because I didn't see it in IMAX the first time.
I saw it in IMAX.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay. And
it was, you know, pretty.
Yeah, right. I mean, everybody kept saying, like, that I had to see it a second time. I mean, I felt that, too. But again, I think that has to do with expectations. I assumed I would be blown away. I wasn't. So rather than decide that, like, oh, maybe the movie doesn't totally work, I think it's a character flaw on my part. I must have missed something. Surely the movie is brilliant.
Right.
I'm somehow...
I think Eric Asperschlager touched upon something, though, where he talked about seeing movies twice. And he said something to the effect of, he saw Avengers for a second time because, and help me out here, he wanted to. It was,
yeah, I don't know if he actually did, or but it was like, there's a difference between wanting to see
and he's seen Dark Knight Rises because he felt like he had to.
Right.
To just kind of clarify his thoughts on it.
And some movies you want to see twice. Actually, after I saw The Dark Knight Rises, I wanted to see it less than once.
Can I erase a third of that?
I wanted to invent a time machine, go back, leave halfway through, because I saw it at one of those fancy theaters where they give you food that's impossible to eat in the dark.
Yes. And a blanket with smallpox on it.
Yes. Here's a blanket someone died in 20 minutes ago. Oh, because I didn't want the crowds on the first weekend.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
So for a couple...
You reserve your seat? Yeah.
For a couple hundred extra dollars, I could see it in a smaller crowd with mediocre food that they're charging me a lot for. And literally, when the food was done...
When the food was done,
I could have left a happy man. You know,
that last mozzarella stick.
That's becoming my new gauge, because I've decided that sometimes I go to the movies just because I like popcorn. And when the popcorn's done...
When it's done...
Sometimes I feel like leaving.
I like that it's this autonomous.
It's like people going to a porn theater. Like, well, I did what I came here to do. Will I stick around and see how this turns out?
And the way he eats popcorn, too, there's definitely a mop up afterwards. You know, this is going to sound like a really dumb, silly thing to say about The Dark Knight Rises. I love Christopher Nolan. I think he's a great director. He obviously knows what he's doing, and the movies have this compelling, the music and the way it's directed. It's such a, and it, as you pointed out,
moving forward all the time.
Oh, always. Yeah, yeah, and as it's been talked about on this podcast before, and not even on this podcast, just in general, it's not so much a superhero comic book movie, it's more a crime movie. Mm-hmm. And it got to a point, and obviously some people's complaints about Dark Knight Rises were that Batman wasn't in the movie enough, that obviously it's a lot of different things going on, but there wasn't enough Batman. I'll be honest, like, because it was such a non-traditional type of comic book movie, it's so real. When he does finally show up in a cape and the bat ears, I'm like, I kind of, like, forget how much I like Dark Knight.
Right.
And I'm like, this isn't as good as Dark Knight. And now he shows up, and I'm just like, I'm done with this. I don't need, you know, and I still liked it, and I'm not trying to, like, sound cynical, but it felt to me a little...
Plus, the popcorn was done.
Yeah.
See, the movie is sort of the most overtly comic booky of the three, I think. I mean, Batman Begins is kind of comic booky, but you have multiple people in costumes fighting,
right.
And you have flying ships, and it's very sort of comic booky, and that was part of my problem, too. But that goes back to what you started to say about the Avengers, where, like, when you see something twice, and I've said this a million times, where the second time you see it for the movie that it is, not the movie you wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And so that was part of why I thought I should go back and see The Dark Knight Rises again, because I was sort of reacting against that comic booky angle because
right.
I wasn't expecting it. And maybe going to see it a second time, knowing that that's the approach the movie takes, maybe it wouldn't bother me as much. I don't know.
The other thing I wanted to scream about, and again, I am not railing against longer films, but when I was growing up, there was one screen, and sometimes two. The Woodfield 1 and 2 was
where I saw mobsters.
No, it's a shoe store. And you had it was in the contract. It had to be 2 hours or less,
right?
Because you had to have show times at 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, and get them in and get them out. And The Avengers, and to a greater extent, Dark Knight Rises, now that opening weekend it's on 6 screens, the 2-hour envelope is gone. And we can go 2:30, 2:45. And I still think The Avengers is too long. I think The Dark Knight Rises is way too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, to your point, I think there's always room for a longer movie. If a movie has something to say,
sure,
it should be longer. But honestly, I'm so happy. We just saw I saw Premium Rush. I just found out today that Patrick had seen it too. It's an hour and a half. It goes by pretty quickly.
Yeah,
and it's like, that's fine.
Thought it still felt kind of long.
Well, a little bit, but my
point, that's the movie's problem.
My point is, it's like 90-minute movies are totally fine and can be great. I mean, Premium Rush wasn't necessarily great, but
it's always the weirdest thing to get out of a movie that you know to be about an hour and 40 minutes, and you get out and you check your watch if you're 100 or your phone, and you're like, oh my god, how is it 2 hours and 20 minutes from the start time of that movie?
Right,
like,
absolutely.
Why did this whole production, driving to and from the theater, why did this take 3.5 hours?
Right.
All I saw was Premium Rush.
I'll segue into it and say that I saw recently The Amazing Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
The Amazing Spider-Man. Saul Spider-Man. And I saw it at the patio. And
there
I saw it was a mistake, and I'll just put this in context. I know we're not talking about...
No, you're good. I saw it. It was a mistake.
To put this in context, not to dwell on this, but it was a couple weeks ago. It was the last night it was at that theater, and I got to think it was the last night that kids were able to see movies because the theater was crammed.
Because all the kids are dead.
Because the theater was crammed.
Spider-Man killed them?
With talking and popcorn throwing and really obnoxious, and also it was very hot. Again, has nothing to do with the movie, but it speaks to my discomfort. And also watching this movie and I think I mentioned this to Patrick, that the movie is 2 hours and 20 minutes, maybe 2:15, 2:20.
Way too long.
It's the longest, quickest movie, meaning not quick, but they jam so much in. They need to get through so much, but it's like, it's so unsatisfying. I did not like that movie whatsoever.
And for the longest time...
You're not wrong.
For the longest time I've said, and I think maybe this might not be true anymore, but for the longest time I said, if the film is compelling, kids will sit still. That's actually a really good gauge of what's on the screen.
Right.
That is kind of going away, though, I think.
I think now with radiated mutant children with attention spans of fruit flies, I'm not sure. But I think it's interesting that you sat through a screening of The Amazing Spider-Man and the kids were acting atrociously, even though what was on the screen was someone with attention deficit syndrome's delight. And a couple of weeks ago, I sat through Paranorman in an empty theater.
Really?
And thought, kind of like what we felt about Winnie the Pooh last summer.
Yeah.
Have either of you seen it?
I saw it Saturday, and the theater was packed.
Okay, that's good news. Where did you see it?
I saw it in Skokie, which is a northern suburb of Chicago, at an AMC, Village Crossing in Skokie. And it was packed. It was Saturday morning, or Saturday afternoon at like 1 or 2. And it was packed. And it was a lot of young kids, too. And the movie has a lot of a little scary elements. Oh, yeah. But the kids weren't really, at least from what I gather, they weren't crying, they weren't freaked out. And they were, even the quieter scenes, they were watching.
That was the buzz before it opened, that it's PG and that it might be too scary for very small children.
Yeah.
Because there's a couple scenes that are that I thought were frightening.
At least just spooky, just like kind of visually...
Spooky scary?
Spooky scary.
I think I can
like
spoil this. I think I can spoil this because it's in the trailer. There's a teddy bear and his face explodes with bats.
Yes.
And I thought, if you're five, that's the stuff of nightmares. Now...
Not if you had a teddy bear like that growing up.
I believe those were recalled. what did you think of Paranorman?
I liked it. I did think it, again, this might be my theme tonight. It did feel kind of long to me. But I liked it a lot. I liked the climax a lot. I love the design of everything.
Yeah,
it
was beautiful. It's
kind of ugly on purpose in a way. And I don't mean ugly in terms of it being grotesque or...
The way the characters are stylized.
Yeah,
his uncle, for example.
Right. And it's even the car. Everything is kind of odd, you know, polygons and angles and stuff like that. It's a very specific type of design.
We've done well over 100 shows. Never used the word polygon.
I was told there would be no math.
I would really like to encourage everyone to go see it and to take kids to it if you think they're old enough. What the film says about bullying,
yeah,
and the parallels it makes between that and the Salem witch trials in terms of, you know, scared people will do just about anything.
Right.
I thought, when is the last time we saw anything like that? That sort of intellectual heft in a children's film. And if the kids don't, if that goes over their heads, that's fine.
Sure.
You still have this nice movie about this sort of odd kid who should be left alone. And I especially love the moment where someone says, well, don't you want them to hurt? Don't you want to hurt them? And he says, what would that solve? I thought, wow.
Yeah.
Imagine a protagonist in a children's film who's wise.
I just needed more more chasing, more running around and like manic music. John Bryan did the score, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I liked it. And my whole reaction to it was kind of like, and I didn't know what to expect. I was maybe expecting just a little tighter. And that's such a weird kind of comment, but I just wanted it to be, you know, when you find something, maybe you guys know what I'm talking about, when you find something that's really, really good and it's like, man, I just want this, love it, because I do agree with everything you're saying about like what it says and all that stuff. I just wanted it to be a little tighter. Even at the climax, like when he goes to confront the villain, he doesn't have a plan, but he does have a plan at first, but then there's no plan. It just kind of, it goes a little.
No, I will agree. The climax takes forever, which is odd because in America, at least, we're used to that proceeding swiftly. It's the climax. It makes me so happy.
For me, it always proceeds very swiftly.
He'll be here all week. Tip your waitresses. It makes me so happy that you saw it in a theater full of kids.
Yeah.
Because
and I liked it.
I saw it opening weekend, maybe because I didn't see it in 3D or something, but my first reaction was, they've made a film with no audience that adults aren't going to go because they think it's for kids too scary for kids.
Did you see it on a weekend or a weekday?
Saturday morning, opening weekend.
Man, that's crazy because I got to think, I mean, kids' movies just seem to me like they're just making money, you know?
Yeah.
And there's one joke that I loved, and I will not spoil it, but there's an image on the screen that's very specific to something, and all the adults laughed. And then you could hear them turn to their kids and explain it. I thought that's great.
There was something cool, too, the John Bryan score. There was a little John Carpenter-esque synthesizer.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's lots of interesting, like, it knows what it's doing, for sure. Yeah.
And during that opening, at the beginning of the film, we're watching a really bad horror film.
Right.
And the soundtrack screams the Goblin score for Dawn of the Dead. So it's like, oh, these people know what they're talking about.
Right, right. No, it was good. You should see it, Patrick.
I plan to.
I think it's doing okay, like money-wise. I think it's up in the top three.
Opening weekend, I think it came in third, which I thought was disappointing because children's films, they sometimes clean up.
Yeah.
and that Bourne was so popular that it carried over.
Now Expendables is carrying over.
It was Expendables, Bourne, and Paranorman opening weekend.
Is Expendables to the end of summer? You said before last summer was Piranha, or two summers
ago. I mean, honestly, I think this last weekend with Premium Rush and Hit and Run, and I think there was one other
movie. Obama 2016.
Well, sure. I kind of count that. I mean, Expendables 2 was really the last big movie, but this is like the weekend where we have a few things left. Let's throw them out very quickly. Sure. And then... And again, some of the more interesting stuff, I think, comes out sort of in those fringe weeks where sure. It's like, this doesn't have to make $100 million its opening weekend, so it's okay to put out something smaller.
I knew the summer was over because last weekend, my wife and I checked the show times and everything, and we looked at each other and we said, there's nothing to say.
But, you know, it's interesting, too, is that so much of the summer was big blockbusters. Even Expendables 2 is a big movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But Dark Knight and Avengers and all the other stuff. I was talking to Patrick and regarding Premium Rush and Hit and Run.
Yeah.
Like, you almost... And I saw them. I saw them both, actually. And you did, too. And I didn't know that you had seen them. But you kind of want to see them. This is your thought. Just do credit. Because you want to support the stuff that's not the... You want to support the average action movie.
They used to make movies that didn't cost $150 million and have to make $300... I mean, they used to just make movies, you know, like middle of the road. Not tiny little indies, not huge blockbusters. They used to just make regular size movies. And they don't anymore. So when they do, it's like, well, we should try and support that.
Yeah.
And hope that they make more. They're not going to.
Plus, I haven't seen it yet, but Hit and Run, to me, looked very interesting for a number of reasons. Uh-oh. Patrick just got the face.
What's interesting is right before we started this podcast, I found out from Patrick that he had seen it, and I said, I didn't like it. And Patrick's like, I like it. But then we talked about it, and I'm like, what the hell do you like about this? Because he didn't say anything positive about it.
There's a lot to like.
But you didn't say anything positive.
No, well, you said it was a piece of garbage. I said, no such thing. I was making fun of the car chases in the movie because it's being marketed as a car chase movie. And there's really only about three car chases, and it's very obvious that they couldn't, it's so low budget, all the actors sort of worked for free, that...
He bought Dax Shepard a motorcycle. Or he bought Dax Shepard bought Bradley Cooper a motorcycle.
That they couldn't get clearances to do car chases on, like, actual roads. So you have car chases, like, around a parking lot or a farm, and they're not...
There's an abandoned airport that they find, and it's like they're
chasing
around a barrel.
And they literally just chase each other in a circle, yeah.
It's, you know, it's funny because I did hear Dax Shepard talk about how he was a big fan of Smokey and the Bandit and all that Cannonball Run 70s chase movies and, like, Bullet, you know. And he's like, this is a throwback to that. And I'm thinking, man, the best car chase movie I've seen recently was Death Proof. It's such a great... Quentin Tarantino knows what he's doing. Say what you want about him, but that the action sequences in that movie are unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I watched Hit and Run, and it's like they're shot kind of... I mean, it's fine. It's not badly shot. But there's even one sequence where he peels out in this car that I got to think, and I might be wrong, but I'm 90% sure I'm right, that they sped up a little bit, like just to like make it seem like it peeled out faster. I'm like, well, that doesn't seem very fair, you know. Like, it seems like it's cheating.
And again, I haven't seen it, but I've heard it and read about it many times being compared to Smokey and the Bandit.
It's nothing like Smokey and the Bandit.
The reviews that I've read say, you know, Smokey and the Bandit is considered trash.
Yeah, right.
This film does not rise car chase wise to the level of Smokey and the Bandit.
It doesn't. And
it rises heart-wise, I think.
It's being sort of misrepresented because, and maybe it's just a failure. If Dax Shepard set out to make a car chase movie, he failed. And he's representing it as one, and so if you go in expecting that, you're going to be disappointed. To me, it reminded me a lot of just a drive-in movie from like 1976. If it had said American International Pictures in front of it, I would have bought that. That's exactly what it felt like.
And that makes me want to see it.
Yeah. And my expectations, though, just to your point, John, about how you've got, you think it's going to be a car chase movie and it's going to be kind of exciting. And the car that he touts, this 1967 Lincoln with 700 horsepower, doesn't appear until 45 minutes into the movie. The villain doesn't appear until about that point, too. And then that car, this isn't really a spoiler, like, but he escapes in the car and... Then the car, the engine gets stolen from the car, so he has to go to another car. And I know that why they're doing that is because he wants to be in different cars and jump around and stuff.
But this also sounds like the marketing people saying, okay, it's a car chase movie.
Right.
Emphasize that, because every clip I've seen on TV, they're in a car.
Yeah.
And they're in a car a lot, but they're not necessarily chasing one another. They're because like the movie, talking about their relationship.
The movie's more about, yeah, like Dax Shepard is in the witness protection program and he's with his girlfriend and she gets a job and they've trapped to make it work. That's the movie.
Well, the stakes are like kind of low for a movie that has like guns and some violence in it. Like ultimately it comes down to like, I've got to get you to that interview on time.
And I did like though that the relationships between the characters all seem pretty realistic and they like no one was really the villain and no one was really the, you know, the hero and like everyone was kind of flawed and people understood those flaws. Even Bradley Cooper, who is pretty obvious that he's the villain. You know, he's a villain, but there's scenes where they're like talking like they're old friends and I kind of like that.
I mean, again, it's all, I really do think it comes down to expectations because the movie comes out at the end of this sort of bloated summer where a lot of things disappointed me and my expectations are very low and it's just like a fun hangout movie. And so I was like, well, that was pleasant the way that like
I agree with
the breezes in the summer, you know, it's like, ooh, that was fun.
The last breeze of summer.
It really was. And so I enjoyed it. It's by no means a great movie. But if you're a fan of, again, like those AIP drive-in movies from the 70s, I think there's stuff to like.
No. How many great movies would have to come out in the summer for you to say it was a great summer?
Two.
Really?
I think.
Because I would argue that this summer... Back to my yay list.
Yeah.
Have you given us a blah yet?
I don't think you did.
I have not given you an ugh.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
You're thinking Mad Magazine.
Blah.
You brought up the amazing Spider-Man.
Side of Blech.
Spider-Man, go on.
Spider-Man is certainly ugh. And just very, very quickly, if we want to dispense with the ugh.
We can go through those quickly.
If it means not making that noise, I'm all for it. I keep getting spit
out. How would you pronounce this?
Oh, no, that's fine.
You're not going to say it. I hear you say it. You got out of it.
Ugh.
There it is.
I was so heartened at some point this summer because the previous column, Shitting on the Classics, was winding down, and I have a soft spot for Dark Shadows, so I went to see the Dark Shadows film, which the words escape me. It was so bad. There should be a word like... bed. No, that is already a word. That we should have a version of bad that is a different vowel that really...
What about then, bod? Wait, that's all kind of a word.
And then a couple weeks went by and you saw it.
Yeah.
And you...
I agree. It's the worst movie I've seen.
Everyone should check out JB's column about Dark Shadows to really...
You can, and I think I said it was the worst movie I've seen in 5 years.
Which I think is maybe an exaggeration, because I think you could point to, like, well, the production design is good.
You see more movies than I do, obviously, so maybe I missed one, but I actually think the production design is part of... Because it's so what we've
come... Deliberately tacky?
What we've come to expect. Although, again, as I said, the first 10 minutes... If the whole movie was like the first 10 minutes, you'd have something.
It's an unbelievably bad movie. It really is. It really is terrible. It's the worst movie I saw this summer. It's probably the worst movie I'll see this year.
So when is Tim Burton like kicked out of the club?
Well, this movie lost a bunch of money, so that helps. Honestly,
I mean, is it still coasting on Batman and Edward Scissorhands?
He's still coasting on Alice in Wonderland,
because
it made
a lot of money,
billions of dollars.
We didn't like it, but. It made a lot of money.
Good point. Like, I forget that it made money, so I'm thinking, well, who could like this movie? Right. I saw it in, I think I rented it off of TV, and I watched it at home.
That's awful.
And I think I just quickly went to my phone and just Facebooked, because I was so bored.
And every time I feel that way, I am shown the trailer to Frankenweenie.
Yeah.
And you're intrigued.
And something inside of me says, Timmy,
do you think,
maybe.
Do you think Frankenweenie will suffer a little bit from... Paranorman, that like if this had been the one animated movie that paid homage to all these classic monster movies that you loved, it would be so special. But now it's deep impact after Armageddon has already come out.
This drips with cynicism, but I've already pondered this question.
Yeah.
And the way I see
it's Paul Blart Mall Cop when I already saw Observer Report.
the way that I think this is going to play out, because it certainly has in the past, is Frankenweenie will not be anywhere near as good as Paranorman, and it'll make 10 times more money.
Sure, sure.
It's interesting, though, because
it's got a brand.
It's got a brand. It's Disney behind it. It's Disney, it's Tim Burton, but it's black and white.
Yeah.
It's got a funny name, too, and the kids might like Frank and Weenie. You know, like that just...
Kids love the word Frank.
They do.
And
like Frankfurters.
It will be in 3D. They like to be
Frank.
It will be in 3D.
Of course, right? Yeah, because every movie is.
So, at least go see Dark Shadows to reiterate what we just said.
But don't pay for it. Don't give that movie money. Somehow find it for free on HBO or something.
It'll rent well if renting is still a thing, because people like Johnny Depp, and people need to get over that. But
I like the girl in it. What's her name?
Eva Green.
Yeah, yeah, I like her a lot.
I said in my column that between her and the other actress in the film, either through costuming or the wonders of nature, that Burton had actually found women who look like the characters in Corpse Bride and The Nightmare Before Christmas. It's like, your body can't, you can't have that be so small and that other be so big. And with the big eyes and the sallow sunken cheeks, it's like, did these women have surgery?
One of his his wives wasn't in Mars Attacks. Who was that girl?
Lisa
that,
Marie.
Lisa Marie.
Yeah, that was. I mean, that to me is the
and in an odd way
cartoon.
Helena Bonham Carter. Sort of
in a different way, but yeah, for sure.
That kind of Zaftig waif. I mean, even that's even that's a
whatever.
Yeah.
Other films in the list prefaced with a word that Patrick doesn't want to hear, and we've been over this. And I was so proud of us. Can I just say this, gentlemen? I was so proud of this. This summer, Patrick saw Prometheus, and I saw Prometheus.
Yeah.
And we did a podcast where, as we talked about it, the film fell apart in our hands. And boy, did people comment on that one.
Yeah.
And the more you think about it, the less sense it makes.
No, it's bad movie.
It's this puzzle egg, and the minute you touch it, it turns to pieces.
It's a bad movie, and again, it's a very well-made bad movie.
I have not seen, just real quick, I have not seen Prometheus, and I said, I want to see it. I want to see it for the purpose of the show, even, too, and Patrick said... Because I was like, but I know it's kind of bad. And Patrick said, it's a unbelievably made, terrible movie.
Yeah.
It's and again, it's part of this thing with, like, Dark Knight Rises or another movie that we already talked about, which I've already forgotten. But people so badly want it to be one thing that they're unable. And, I mean, I don't mean to speak for people. If people love it, they love it. And that's great. Everybody should have movies that they love. It seemed to me like people so badly wanted it to be the next great science fiction movie, the next great Ridley Scott movie, that they were assigning it all these things that it doesn't have.
But also the trailer, I mean, set it up like that, too.
Absolutely.
That trailer
was... It looked... And you go in and you want to fill it with all this stuff, but, like, the movie doesn't deserve that. None of that's in the movie.
You want to fill it with better situations and dialogue that makes sense and
so
characters.
So you're pretending that it's like, oh, no, it's just being sort of obtuse, but all the pieces connect, and it's... Or yeah, they'll do it in the next movie, which is just the new most offensive thing in the world. But, like, Prometheus is really bad, and for a while I think it was coasting on people thinking it wasn't. But maybe people are starting to come around.
I said before it's like a puzzle egg, but what it really reminds me of is there's this amazing play that you should all read called Inherit the Wind. It's also a very fine film by Stanley Kramer, and there's a speech where the character based on Clarence Darrow remembers getting a rocking horse as a kid that he had admired through a front window of a toy store forever. And this rocking horse was really something, and it cost his parents like 2 weeks' pay. And on Christmas morning, he jumps in it, and it breaks. It's all shine and no substance, and that's Prometheus.
Yeah. And again, I feel like it goes back to expectations, because this was... Especially for a nerd like myself, I mean, this was a big summer. You had a Batman movie, a Spider-Man movie, a Ridley Scott science fiction alien prequel. You had the Avengers. But those were always the movies that disappointed me, you know? And it's not – I feel like I was able to sort of temper my expectations. I didn't necessarily go into any of them saying, like, this is going to be the best movie I've ever seen.
Mike brought this up on a previous podcast, and I think I've even mentioned it before because I love it so much. It almost sounds like a Patton Oswalt routine.
Yeah.
If you could go back and talk to yourself when you were a kid, you know, when you grow up, there's going to be all these comic book right. movies. And will I like them? Well, no, you pretty much won't.
Right. And there's too many of them now, and they're being done badly. I mean, those were the movies that disappointed me, and it was the movies that maybe I didn't have this expectation for or some sort of attachment to, or it was right. like it could be a surprise, you know?
Done badly is an understatement. And I want to talk real quick, go back to Amazing Spider-Man. I mentioned before the context in which I saw it was horrible, but also I think the movie does some things okay. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've talked, there's not a podcast on
there is, Spider-Man. Yeah.
There is a Spider-Man podcast?
Yeah. Eric Asperschlager.
Do I even work on this website? fthismovie.net?
Just once a year at the end of summer.
I know, Jesus. Come on. Cut me some slack. Waterworld, come on. But my point was, watching this Spider-Man, I know it's been talked about, like, why reboot, blah, 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 and I won't repeat that. But my big thing with that, it was like, obviously the trend in comic book movies is moving towards realism, moving towards this kind of, it's no longer fantastical. It's got to be like a regular kid, and he's all emo, blah, blah, blah. And John, you brought up something. This is such a weird kind of way to shoehorn this thought in, but something like the Uncanny Valley, when you've got a puppet or a animation that isn't cartoonish, and bear with me, folks, bear with me. You've got a puppet or an animation that isn't super cartoonish, but it's very realistic and it's creepy, right? Is that kind of a very paraphrase, the Uncanny Valley? My whole thing with comic book movies is their very nature has to be kind of fantastical and has to be kind of comic booky, and they try to have it both ways. And I'm thinking, like, I like certain elements of the relationship between Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone. I actually thought some of their dialogue was pretty good, and I think they're good actors, and I'm not even a big Andrew Garfield fan, but I didn't even mind him so much in this movie. And then you've got this, like, it's got to be realistic and all these things, but then it takes this leap where all of a sudden the cranes are all aligned. It's like the movie tries to have it both ways, where it's trying to be realistic and gritty and real, and then the scene where the crane operator is like, that guy saved my son, and all the crane operator,
that's
look here.
That's the Spider-Man that saved my son.
Right, it's so, and I don't know, like, even the Uncanny Valley thing doesn't even quite make sense, but my point simply is...
No, I know exactly what you're talking about, because the Dark Knight films by Christopher Nolan established, well, let's do this in a way that the audience will buy as real.
Right.
But you can't get around the fact that these things are based on comic books.
Right.
And so you constantly have these moments sort of that stick out like a sore thumb.
Right.
Where I can see the crane thing in a comic book.
Right.
I can see
right.
the panel.
But when you look at, like, the scope of the city and how they're trying to make it, like, the police, whatever his title was, the Dennis Leary character, and all these, elements that's like, no, we've got to, like, everything is very pragmatic and logical and step by step and A to B, and then all of a sudden it takes this leap where it's like, oh, it's just a comic, it's trying to have its cake and eat its too.
This is
point.
Real,
right?
Except for the enormous man lizard.
Right.
This was another thing that made
me... what a horrible villain.
This was another thing that made me kind of crazy this summer, was that every time one of these movies came out, it was incredibly polarizing, and you couldn't have a conversation about it because it was either, I love it, I hate it, and both sides are shouting at each other, and it's like, well, can't we just talk about The Amazing Spider-Man? And do any of us feel that strongly about it?
No,
I don't understand why, like, you love this? This is the movie you're going to go to bat for? And part of my frustration with that was that then it became, like, the Sam Raimi movie was getting shouted down. Like, that movie was garbage. This is the real Spider-Man movie. And it's like, well, we don't have to erase one just to like another. But, okay. But the Sam Raimi movie sort of addressed that. They were very comic booky.
They're fantastical. I keep saying that word, but it was this, like, the color palette and the way it all worked. But it had humanity, it had heart, it had some realism.
But this is part of what makes the Avengers work so well and makes it so entertaining, is that it embraces all that comic booky stuff. It's larger than life, it's very colorful, it's sort of upbeat. It's not this dark, brooding, like,
I'm sick of the dark, brooding movie. I'm done with it. I'm done with, like, the dark, brooding.
There's
I don't need
cynicism in the Avengers, you know?
One thing I have to share with you, because I thought it was so funny, at the fancy theater where they serve you mediocre food and you sit in a fancy chair, they have this pre-show entertainment that's often devoted to them showing you the chef of booze making a drink that you could order right now.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
But they had one of the little pre-show features was an interview with Stan Lee.
That's kind of cool.
Watch this. And one of the questions they asked him was, people are complaining that the Spider-Man reboot was too soon. And his answer was, yeah, people have said that to me a lot. And my response is, well, how long should we wait? And I'm sitting in the theater, and I almost, like, stood up and shouted, which I often feel like doing, and I'm like, that's not an answer to the question!
Okay, but to be fair to Stan Lee, when he answered that question, he was being propped up by Jonathan Silverman and Andrew McCarthy, no?
Weekend at Stanley's.
The problem is not the only problem with The Amazing Spider-Man is, like, that it doesn't answer that question, like, hey, why are they rebooting Spider-Man already?
They do some things kind of differently.
Make a movie that addresses, like, here's why, because this one's awesome, and you won't even wonder that. But when it's just like,
they do some things differently, and it's kind of like, well, we had this other idea. Instead of this, he did this. Yeah, and it's like, right. But everything else is pretty much the same, right? Okay, good.
Also, and before we leave Amazing Spider-Man, and I hate to keep up bringing Patton Oswalt, he has a routine about doing punch-ups on scripts. Yeah. And that's where they get a whole bunch of comedians in to suggest lines. And sometimes the film is finished, so they have to suggest lines that you could insert in the film that's finished. A lot of his quips when he's swinging have this air of a desperate third-rate comedian. Because when he says, I'm swinging here...
I even tweeted that. That's like, what is this?
What is the actual line?
Hey, I'm swinging here. He really is swinging on a bridge. And
that is a reference to Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah. Right.
An early 70s Best Picture winner that was originally rated X. Because, you know, when I take a 12-year-old to the theater, hey, Dad.
Let me tell you all about Joe Buck.
Hey, Pops. You think we're going to get Midnight Cowboy references?
A male hustler.
So what you're saying is...
So who suggested the joke and who said yes?
Right, exactly. So what you're saying is I should listen to the podcast of Amazing Spider-Man
but again,
on fthismovie.net before I open my dumb, beautiful mouth.
Every big, stupid franchise movie now doesn't have to work. All it has to do is be a preview for the next stupid, big franchise movie. So Spider-Man is mediocre at best, right? But if it makes enough money, we'll do another one. Maybe we'll get it right this time.
Not necessarily,
but that's Prometheus, too. Just like, oh, we're sorry that you're all completely unsatisfied by everything that happened in this movie. We'll get it the next time. That was our plan. Bullshit.
We'll get it right the next time, suckers. The best example of that was Green Lantern, which I think is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And I've talked about this at length.
What's worse, Green Lantern or Dark Shadows?
I might say
How
Dark
many
Shadows.
Angels can dance on the head of a pin. I mean,
you
have just
burn
blown my mind.
Or drown.
You're the one who told me that after it opened, disappointingly, there was talk of a sequel.
Yeah.
Has that talk been quenched?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank God.
Because, you know, at a certain point, they not only have to respond to, like, the box office, but they have to realize, oh, no one liked that
movie.
They
also have to respond to reality, although it was...
Science building.
You beat me to it.
I
was going to say... My joke was that was going to be the title of the sequel.
And my joke was just saying the words.
Green Lantern 2, Science Building.
Back to your list.
Okay.
Oh, I've got a movie that's...
This list is great. This is the framework for the entire podcast.
But I've got a movie...
These long tangents, and then we go back to the list.
I've got a movie that is both yay,
okay,
meh, and ugh.
Wow. I can't wait to hear this.
Red Tails. How about that movie? Cuba Gooding Jr., Tuskegee Airmen.
Right. When did that come out?
You guys are looking at me funny.
No, I know the film you're referencing.
I think it came out in January.
Wait, what?
That was a George Lucas joint.
Believe it or not.
I just wanted to make a Red Tails joke, and now I've made it, and now I'll show myself to the door.
When that came out, I thought to myself, Doug is going to see this.
Yeah. Airplanes.
And just today.
Oh, no. Horrible
and
racist.
Black people.
Just today, one of my students came up to me and said, Mr. Baudelaire, have you ever seen a film called Memphis Belle?
Oh.
You're all, have I?
And thanks to Doug, I was able to say
I'm the guy
who's all Irish if he tried.
I'm the guy who saw Flyboys opening weekend.
I saw Memphis Belle for the first time in your fine living room.
Yeah, and that was the best. The fine living room was the finest part about that movie.
More films that can be described with a noise Patrick doesn't want to hear.
Yes.
I think I brought this up before. To Rome with Love.
Which I never saw.
I didn't see
which
either.
You missed nothing.
Okay.
Again, we got tricked.
because of Midnight in Paris.
Right.
And the one before that.
What?
Wimbledon.
No. The one before that was like, You Will Meet a Tall, Dark Stranger.
Okay, then by
the
way, completely wrong. Wimbledon. That's Match Point.
I know what you're talking about, Chris.
Because on a previous podcast, we established that there were all these Woody Allen films that Patrick saw that I didn't go see. So the chronology's off. I can't explain how bad To Rome with Love is, but let me try.
Please, because I'm actually still kind of like, it could be charming. Like, for real, give me the warning.
It starts on a street in Italy where there's a police officer, like, up on a big cube, and he's directing traffic.
He's like, I got a pizza I don't know who belonged to.
That would have been funnier. The camera tracks in. He turns to the camera and begins to narrate. You know, when I stand up here, I see everything. I see love in all the different ways.
This is
Look
great.
Over there.
Wait, then, I shouldn't see this movie?
And then... I think I've said this before. He had some New Yorker pieces that he wasn't quite finished with, and he said, what if they all took place in Italy? Done. And spoiler alert, at the end of the film, we see a guy in an apartment window who we've never seen before, and the camera tracks in, and he says, don't listen to the cop! I'm the one who sees everything, and when you come back, I'll have more stories to tell.
All right. That's a great ending.
Is the Woodman setting up a sequel?
He's taking the Prometheus. I'm sorry you didn't like this. We have new stories next time.
To Rome with Love 2, The Guy in the Window.
So you're saying instead of seeing To Rome with Love, I should just see Midnight in Paris again.
I was annoyed even in the... And I wanted to see To Rome with Love, but I was annoyed even in the trailer. Like, sometimes Woody Allen's impulse to go for the hackiest joke. Oh, dear.
Is that a chainsaw that just
JB's fell? Monsters are jumping off the table because we're talking about To Rome with Love.
The 12-inch figure of Leatherface just dropped its chainsaw.
He goes for the hackiest joke. There's a scene in the trailer with Penelope Cruz, who's very pretty, and she's wearing a dress that's the reason to see the movie, but like they're looking at, she's a prostitute.
Yeah.
They're looking at the ceiling, I think, in the Sistine Chapel, and somebody says, oh, could you imagine spending all that time on your back? And Penelope Cruz gives this look, like, ha, ha, ha. And that's the joke, right? And people chuckle in the trailer, and then she goes, I can, and it's like, no,
right?
No. We got it. We were laughing already.
No.
We were laughing from the look.
But you
the look is enough.
You haven't seen the film. That's the clip.
Welcome to Rome. I know a nicer hooker.
No. Let's go back to that scene.
She's talking like a mouse.
Let's go back to the scene that you just said, because you only saw the trailer.
Yes.
Can you imagine? This is what it's like in the film.
All right.
Can you imagine working on your back? Beat.
Right. Laugh.
Look. I can. Beat. Look. Someone says, you're a whore. Okay, I just made that up. That does not happen in the film.
But I'll make a comparison. Patrick had seen Total Recall, the remake of Total Recall, which might be on your list. Did you see it?
No.
Okay.
Good job.
Because again,
everyone.
Thank you for again warning us not to see it. Everyone should read Patrick's awesome review of Total Recall on FThisMovie.net. By the way, if you do go to FThisMovie.blogspot.com, it will take you to FThisMovie.net.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Good point.
But in the preview of Total Recall, there's a line in which he's escaping from his wife, Kate Beckinsale, and he's with Jessica Biel, and she goes, is that your wife? And he says...
She says, like, you're married? Because she didn't know he was married
right.
or something.
And he goes, there's a beat, and he goes, it's safe to say we're separated, which is such a mouthful and such a clunky line.
Yeah.
And Patrick pointed out, just give a look. Like, we get it.
Yeah.
And I get, but the thing is, you can't even do that.
Is it crazy that my wife is trying to kill us?
Right.
Like, no,
and I just rewatched the original Total Recall.
Consider that a divorce.
Right. Consider that a divorce.
Give the people the air pulling.
Consider that a divorce in the Ice Age.
It's the chilling sound of Mara Doom.
And a divorce.
Sorry. This is a segue to Total Recall, though, so talk about that.
Put on your Sunday finest.
At this point, we invite you to comment on who has the worst Schwarzenegger impression. I win.
Listen, so the Tuskegee Airmen were African Americans in World War II.
Honestly, there's nothing to say about Total Recall. It was one of the. It's just another movie that like was mediocre and disappointing. It filled the slot for that week. It was the big blockbuster, and I don't know. No one liked it.
You know? The biggest thing I remember hearing when it first came out in the trailers, where they were saying, with the Z, they were saying, it goes back to the original Philip K. Dick short story.
Yeah.
Have you, I assume you've read that short story. It's only 10 pages long, which is like, we can sell it to you for,
we can remember it for you wholesome.
Have you, anyone read?
No.
It's a long time ago.
It's all takes place in the doctor's office, and there's kind of like two stories, one about Mars and one about the client saving the world from alien invaders who are miniature, tiny people. And both of them are turn out to be true. Like, he did both of these things. And it's just like, this isn't even about Mars. This is apparently about the other side. I just read your review about the elevator that goes to China.
Yeah, it goes through the Earth. Again, if you're going to do these, you know, we're living in a culture now where everything is a sequel and a remake and a reboot and a prequel. Everything is based on an existing property. And if you're going to do that, you have to justify your existence. So if you're going to be a remake of Total Recall, when many of us remember going to see the last Total Recall, you have to justify your existence by not constantly referencing the other better Total Recall, which this movie does all the time. You want people to forget that there was another better Total Recall because you want them so wrapped up in your new improved Total Recall. But instead they do all these stupid cutesy little callbacks like, remember this, remember this? Yes, I do. I wish I was watching that instead of this piece of shit.
Hey, I'm swinging here.
Exactly. More bad movies. And then we'll talk about movies. Good.
Yeah, let's get back to
I wanted this summer show to not just be us complaining and yet.
No, because there's a rainbow at the end.
Yay!
I have another meh movie
because I have
done,
two films to recommend.
Yeah.
I don't know why I went to see this, but I went to see Rock of Ages.
Oh, interesting. Hmm. I missed that one.
Horribly, horribly bad. And I can only guess
it looks bad.
That it's based on a Broadway show
where
people are on stage in front of you really singing and dancing to live music.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's a concert, basically, where people are performing. Yeah.
Right.
Right. And I'm not the biggest fan of the musical genre that they're mining and stuff, but it's just miserably awful.
Yeah. It kind of looked terrible, I thought.
Poorly directed, poorly choreographed. There's one scene between Russell Brand and Alec Baldwin, which they kind of pull off just on the strength of their
charisma.
Yeah. It's so bad. and here's another thing. You had referenced the fact that comic book movies have this schizophrenia that it has to be real, but it has
you know
to be
what?
Comic book.
I went on for like 4 minutes, and that's the best way to put it. Comic book movies are schizophrenic, and I'm like, what's a Duncanny Bell? I'm trying to make this comparison to something that doesn't exist.
Here's a similar situation with Rock of Ages. Broadway shows are not known for their plots or their librettos.
Right.
We are there for performance. Rock of Ages, the film, they take the story very seriously because it's a movie and we're here for the story, but it stops every 10 minutes for a bad musical number. It seems like they should have thrown the story away.
Well, you know what? Part
of focused that, on the performance.
Part of that, too, I think, and I haven't seen the Broadway show, but I think part of that is because it's the kind of musical that's reverse engineered, because they just took all these songs and then they had to invent a story to string it together.
Right.
And so they pay a lot of attention to the story aspect.
But I know, once.
Other musicals have done that much, much better.
Well, one specific musical is the best musical.
Mamma Mia. I'm sorry, you went a different way.
It's joyful.
I'm going to stop defending that film. And just so you don't think I just don't like schlock, I found my way into the best exotic Marigold Hotel, which is...
They made a movie out of that hotel?
Feed every sort of high-blown, has-something-on-its-mind film for middle-aged people, feed it into a computer, and the computer will spit out this. Amazing actors that we have nothing but love for. They're given nothing interesting to do. They're given nothing interesting to say. After the first 15 minutes, you can go, okay, mop, it'll be mop, mippity-mip, mippity-mippity-mip, and here's how it's going to end.
And that's the end of that.
Just
case closed.
And I got the feeling that the people around me were enjoying it.
Oh, of course.
Which... because it's so comforting to not have to think.
Well, and there's people who just like to go to a movie that feel like it's servicing them for a change.
Oh, yeah.
you know, the Nancy Meyers movies are always very successful. Or what's the one that Meryl Streep has now? That
Hope Springs.
Hope Springs. Hope Springs.
And if you think I'm only full of Red Tails jokes, just wait till I get started on Hope Springs.
Our wives went to see it.
People will, you know, middle-aged to older women, men, whoever, may
Let's
go
just say
see
that I caught him red-handed.
Hope Springs.
It wasn't pretty.
And laugh a lot and really like it. And maybe that's because it's good, or maybe it's just because that is an audience that doesn't usually have movies that are sort of directed at them. And so they're just like, I'm enjoying this because it's trying to speak to me.
Give me a quick little hope. I know you didn't see it, but what your wives had said, you know, really quickly hearsay.
I honestly don't remember.
Just a piece of shit.
I can summarize it, I think, in one sentence.
That's all I need.
Steve Carell is a character in the film. In every single shot
that was a semicolon
of the film that he's in, he's sitting. We never see him when he's not sitting in his office.
Okay. So is the theory that Steve Carell has no legs? You guys, what happened to Steve Carell?
I don't have a Steve Carell. He's not made one good movie post-office.
The other thing about Best Exotic, and I don't mean to get all sociological, our population is aging. The baby boom is getting old. This seems to be something that you could say something about.
Mm-hmm.
And not hit people over the head with the enormous brown shit hammer of obviousness, but say something other than,
moop, mop, meep, moop.
Here's what the film says. If you're aging and don't have enough money, it'll work out.
Oh, good. That's great. That is great news.
Made me feel better.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then I realized I had spent my money on the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
You saw that really expensive.
So now the mirror is reflecting the mirror. And Patrick has written about this in places. I had such high hopes.
Best himself.
I had such high hopes for the campaign. And
yeah,
it has nothing to say.
It's weird because last summer was sort of defined by this notion that, like, oh, the R-rated comedy is back, and you had Bridesmaids, and you had Horrible Bosses.
Mean-spiritedness is back.
Yeah, and Due Date. Well, I don't know if that came out in the summer. You had The Change Up. There was another big one, though, that came out. I don't remember what it was. But there were, Bad Teacher was one. All these R-rated comedies came out. And
this
they all
material
made...
has never been done with an R rating.
They all made...
We're going to show one tit.
They all made over $100 million, except for The Change Up, which nobody saw. So it was like comedy...
Hold on, I'm still laughing about one tit.
Sure, sure.
Well, it's an R.
Because women have two. That's the joke.
That last summer was a big summer for comedy, and this summer I didn't think there was one good. I mean, I saw most of the comedies that came out because I had to review them.
I think there was one.
I saw The Dictator. I saw That's My Boy. I saw The Campaign.
I think one that's met is Ted.
I saw The Watch. Ted might be the closest thing to a good comedy we got this summer.
Yeah. Very quickly, quick tangent. The romantic comedy conundrum. I was not a fan of Seeking a Friend. I know it touched you, and we both thought maybe if you saw it again, it might stop touching you.
That's right.
Have you seen Ruby Sparks?
No.
I saw Ruby Sparks. I went to a screening where the directors and the stars were in attendance.
What?
And they answered questions afterwards, and I could see why movie studios do press junkets, because I was blinded by celebrity. And in the days after Ruby Sparks, I began to think about Ruby Sparks. And the film slowly fell apart, although I will give it one thing. F-heads, if you're looking for a recommendation, there is one scene in Ruby Sparks that's really incredible and might actually make it worth seeing. It's like, oh, this took a turn. I have never seen this in this type of movie. Why couldn't the whole thing have been this? Yeah. Well, then we can't sell it.
Yeah.
But I would argue that Safety Not Guaranteed was a fine comedy.
Yeah, I guess.
Is it a comedy?
I mean, it is.
Not
I
in the vein of, like,
comedy.
Bridesmaids. Or,
yeah, and I was just categorizing it differently. But, yeah, sure, if you're going to... I wouldn't put it in
you
the
know,
same
I,
group
I'll be
as
honest, I
kind
of forgot
watch.
About Safety Not Guaranteed and, yeah. and Seeking a Friend for the End of the World because they were so tiny. They came out and they went.
Blip,
there.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to see Seeking a Friend because that kind of speaks to me. And even Ruby Sparks, I remember... When the trailer came out, I wrote about it, and I'm like, this actually looks interesting.
And here's
I read that column, watching trailers with Battleship.
Here's the thing about Ruby Sparks, which I found very interesting, because at the theater that's by our houses that we all love that we've talked about ad nauseum. Something weird happened last week, and it screams contractually obligated screening. After a week or two at AMC South Barrington, which is the theater we frequent the most, Ruby Sparks was down to one screening a day, 240.
Yeah,
that's not a good
and
time.
And that doesn't happen.
Not usually, no.
They either carry it over right. or they drop it.
Right.
So this film, you know, sign on the dotted line, must be shown on at least one screen yeah, every maybe. Day of the damn week. That's so weird.
Yeah, well, because again, then they probably had something that only showed at 5 and 7. I mean, I'm pretty sure The Hunger Games is still playing, and that movie came out in March.
The yeah. only people who want to see Ruby Sparks are the afternoon people. This is not a film for the morning people or the night people.
I did not love the trailer to Ruby Sparks. It annoyed me in sort of that what Nathan Rabin calls the manic pixie dream girl way, which I know the movie is sort of about, but I took issue with the fact when I saw, you know, at the end of the trailer, they run their credits real fast, and I saw that it was actually written by Zoe Kazan.
Yes.
And I thought, you can't write yourself as the dream girl. I have a problem with that.
Right. That was one of the questions she was asked post-screening and responded in a way that indicated she was really tired of answering that question.
Sure.
And perhaps
it
had never occurred to her how self-aggrandizing it is to write yourself that part.
Like, literally, the dream girl.
She's cute. Hey, did you spoil it?
No, I haven't seen it. In the trailer,
no, the trailer gives it away, because it's, you know,
she's a construct. He writes, what? And she appears.
I
you know?
Don't remember the trailer.
You've seen far too many trailers.
I do. I've got trailer brain.
She's cute, and she's charming. Paul Dano I actually liked a lot, because I haven't seen him in a lot of comedies, because, of course, I've seen him in Little Miss Sunshine.
And he's usually just like, I'm indie Paul Dano.
What I really objected to is there's a detour where they visit his parents, and it's a zany Annette Bening and a zanier Antonio Banderas.
Are they the Fockers?
And I'm like, there's no reason for this to be in the film.
Yeah.
There's no reason for this to be in the film.
I want to get back to Ted real fast. Yeah. I know we're kind of against the clock here.
That's all right. Good.
Okay. I saw Ted recently, because you just mentioned before that might be the one that was the funniest.
Yeah.
Not the best.
Right.
And not nearly, like, it wasn't even successful as a movie, necessarily. I saw Ted recently, and I remember you saw it. Have you seen Ted, JB?
No.
I think hearing from Patrick how it doesn't quite work. And I sat down and I watched it, and for the first half to two-thirds, I'm like, this is pretty funny, and this is moving okay. And then the last half, or the last third, is completely off the rails. There's chases that don't go anywhere. They're running around Fenway Park. It's a complete mess.
A half hour too long, too, because I think it's over 2 hours, which is
criminal
to the, for your talking teddy bear movie.
Yeah,
that's the third act problem of many comedies. And I know in Unsung, which is every Tuesday, I've been looking at comedies lately and reached the conclusion that comedy should be short. And that the ultimate comedy is Duck Soup by the Marx Brothers. 68 minutes, man. 68 minutes. In fact, in the 30s, movies were so short that on October 24th, I think it's October 24th, Fathom Events is showing Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein as a double feature, which will put you back on the sidewalk, I believe, in 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Wow.
So both of those great. Films
you couldn't
are
even see
short.
Amazing Spider-Man in that time.
And wouldn't.
No.
But no. Ted is, there's so much about
there's
Ted.
There's good jokes
there's,
in Ted.
My point simply is there's a lot of stuff that means very Family
Guy-esque.
They're
just in a bad movie.
And there's lots of Seth MacFarlane's like worst base instinct where he makes like a dumb Katy Perry joke or this. Right. But there's also some really
the movie
funny.
Ends with like him taking shots at Brandon Routh, a guy who's never done anything to anyone.
Right.
Like,
it's just bizarre. But it's so long. And it's
a bad Superman movie.
It speaks to something Patrick has talked about before too in terms of a lot of the comedies from the 80s.
Yeah.
And maybe early 90s, fell into this pattern of, like, what was the examples you gave? Twins and...
Three Men and a Baby is the one that always stood out to me, where it's like, for a little bit over an hour, you're in this sort of family comedy, and then the last act, like, someone has a gun and is chasing them, and, well, where did this come from? Right. Why is this in the movie?
And it has nothing to do with anything, it doesn't make it better.
They just don't know how to, like... add drama, so right. It's like, well, they're exactly, being chased by someone with a gun.
That's exactly how Ted is. It's the Giovanni Ribisi character is it's not. I like Giovanni Ribisi mostly when he's chasing unobtainium, not chasing teddy bears. But he is in it and doesn't do anything funny except, like, a dance that's not funny. And it's like, please stop, and please, Ted, say something funny. And he does a couple times, but for real, like, I'm begging the bear to, like, amuse me.
Begging the bear. Is that a euphemism? I am not a fan of Seth MacFarlane's work, and so that's why I skipped that one.
Yeah.
Two yays.
All right.
And I believe both of you have seen one, and I'm thinking neither of you have seen the other one. Moonrise Kingdom is amazing, and it's a return to form for Wes Anderson, and it's one of the few movies I've seen twice this year. This time, was that really as awesome as I thought it was? So I went to see it again, and unless something crazy happens, it's going to be my favorite film of the year. It's just so good and says so many things about so many things, and his old stock company is back.
I think it's premature to say it's the best movie of the year when Trouble with the Curve hasn't even come out yet.
Is that really the title of that thing?
When Chasing Mavericks is just a few weeks out. Come on, JB.
I liked Moonrise Kingdom. I don't love it as much as you. A couple podcasts ago, maybe, I think I said we were talking about Life During Wartime, the Todd Solondz movie. And I said, like, I don't think I ever need to see another Todd Solondz movie. Moonrise Kingdom might have been the movie where I'm like, I'm pretty good with Wes Anderson. Like, I've seen what he does.
At least he'll go out on top, because I think Moonrise Kingdom is pretty great, but it does seem to be, like, the same movie.
Kind of, yeah. Again, I don't dislike the movie. I don't even dislike Wes Anderson. I just feel like I keep seeing him make the same movie.
I love it when Bill Murray throws a shoe. I love it that Bob Balaban is this figure who's outside of the film and yet very inside of the film. I thought that was different. It would be as if Alec Baldwin showed up in the Royal Tannenbaums.
Right.
I loved it. And I went to see Beasts of Southern Wild, not knowing anything about it, which was good. So the only thing I'm going to say about it is, you've heard this thousands of times, it is unlike any movie you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And
in a good way.
It's very terrific for a number of reasons. I really recommend it, especially because there were weekends this summer that got so bad, I actually said to myself, maybe I'll go see Ted.
So what is Beasts of the Southern Wild? Give me some backstory.
It's a film. For the first 10 minutes, I thought it was a documentary.
Okay.
It's not. It's a fictional film about a very specific group of people who live in a very specific place in New Orleans called the Bathtub.
Okay.
And their beliefs and what happens during, it's never explicitly named, but I think it was Katrina, what happens when they get washed out. And it specifically focuses on this one little girl being raised by a very dysfunctional father in a very dysfunctional society. And again, the performances are so not Hollywood. That's one of the things that made me think it was a documentary. Between the little girl and her father, it's like, if one of the reasons we go to movies is to see stuff we've never seen in movies.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
This is 90 minutes of, I have never seen this in a movie
sounds
ever.
I don't think I've even really heard about that movie, and that's a shame because it sounds like it's pretty great.
And I resisted it because on the surface it felt like, we've talked about this before, the movie that's work. The movie that feels like a school assignment.
Oh, of course. I've got DVR filled with those types of movies. I've got My Week with Marilyn sitting on my coffee table for 4 weeks. Like, I have to watch this.
There is a film that is difficult to form a critical opinion on.
But it's interesting that you say that, though, because from what you're saying about Moonrise Kingdom, too, you love Moonrise Kingdom. It almost seems like you respond to the non-Hollywood performances, too. Like, those kids in Moonrise Kingdom are so great and lovely and wonderful and charming. And they are, I mean, Wes Anderson plucked them up and just, you know. I almost think it's a shame that those kids probably think to themselves that I'm going to be a big Hollywood actor. And it's like, no, you are perfect in this because Wes Anderson, like,
you do the very specific thing that he wants you to do very well.
And I think the one girl, Hermione, could go on to something, but she's Hermione. And the boy is not going to, I can't imagine him, you know, it's going to be, it's like Napoleon Dynamite trying to make a career out of being an ice skater, you know.
But the other thing that I liked, and again, I obviously like Moonrise more than both of you, is like Anderson obviously has the stock company, most especially Bill Murray. And I don't really see him doing anything in the film that we haven't seen him do before. But it's interesting to see other actors enter the Wes Anderson universe and see if it works or see if they're rejected like a bad kidney. I thought Bruce Willis was so excellent in Moonrise Kingdom, and...
Yeah, he was.
So sad without asking us to pity him.
Yeah.
The scene at the kitchen table where he pours the boy a drink. Yeah. I just thought that was a really, really nice scene.
If you liked him in that movie, you should have seen him in Expendables 2. Just kidding.
I just saw him recently in Die Hard. It was great.
Yeah, it was.
That, how could we have forgotten? That was the highlight that of was this movie screening.
That was the best movie of we Die saw Hard.
I was so sad last week. I saw Hit and Run. A, that's why I was kind of sad. But B, it was in Theater 12. The Die Hard Theater. And I was like,
that's Die Hard Town.
I know. Forget it, Doug. It's Die Hard Town.
Please, Battleship.
The next time we do an F This Movie screening, we should announce it way in advance so that some of our friends can fly in.
All my friends are in this room. That's
and at that point, Doug looks wistfully at the action figures, and it gets a little creepy.
I liked a movie that came out, and I wrote a review of it, so I won't say that much about it, but Magic Mike came out this summer and was very successful, which is good because, again, it's sort of this... counter-programming that we've talked about. Like, it's not the big, dumb $150 million blockbuster. It was like this little $7 million movie that Channing Tatum and Steven Spielberg paid for themselves.
It was pretty haywire.
It was totes haywire.
A work colleague went to see it and didn't like it and deliberately brought it up, and I told her what I thought of it because I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
And she said, I knew you would have the reason to like it.
What does that mean?
Because I said, well, it was a Steven Soderbergh film, and those are usually interesting, and it reminded me of a character-driven movie from the 70s.
Yeah.
And she said, see, I don't know anything about that, and I don't know Steven Soderbergh, so I hated it. It didn't help that she saw it in a large, crowded theater with drunken women, because she went to the fancy theater with the mediocre food, and we have to remember that that theater is also a bar.
Yeah, right.
So there you go. Drunk.
I saw it in a very crowded theater. I saw it, like, maybe the first show of the first day it was out, and it was a very crowded theater, almost entirely women, and a very strange atmosphere. They had come in groups. They had sort of...
They came for a bachelorette party.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it felt like, and there was a lot of giggling and people were responding even to the trailers. Everything played because everybody's ready to see guys.
Everything played
their
until
shirts
the
up.
Movie started, though.
Yeah, and then it's like people about halfway through are like, wait, I don't know if I like this. It's so, not a big naked strip party.
I didn't come for a movie.
It's so interesting because we talk a lot about how things are misrepresented. Movies have trailers that don't quite match the theme of the movie or the tone of the movie, and how advertisements oftentimes, like, they need to kind of find an angle. And with Magic Mike, I almost think it's like a marketing coup because, and it's personal bias because I obviously, like, we all like Steven Soderbergh. We all want this movie to do well. We all know it's going to be good. We saw it. It was good. And I'm like, well, I'm glad that all these, you know, yentas saw this movie.
Got
and
tricked into
yeah.
a good movie.
And I'm sure some of them didn't like it, but I have to think a couple of them were like, well, that was pretty good. Maybe I'm being optimistic.
But I had advanced the notion that not only did the marketing people take over on the advertising, but I think some pressure was brought to bear, marketing department and studio, for Soderbergh to cut the strip sequences so that they were longer.
And those strip sequences, though, I would think that the girls got a little bit... I mean, they were pretty, like, erotic, you know, for lack of a better word.
I love all the dance sequence where Kevin Nash either can't do it or won't do it. I thought that was the funniest thing. Go, Kevin.
Most of the guys on stage actually were not great dancers. But Channing Tatum is so good that he pulls
forward. Why did he become... I mean, I used to hate this guy. Like, I used to... And now he's just like, oh, I can't wait.
He's
American. I can't wait to see 10 years.
He's America's sweetheart. What is the lesson that we could take away from the summer, then?
Lower your expectations.
Maybe.
Premium Rush is the best movie of the summer. I like any movie that ends with a flash mob and a murder. But it should be just a fun,
I have to
movie.
Admit, I... Premium Rush, again, is one of these movies that, like, needs to be what it is a little bit more, because I wanted it to be...
A fun bike
cellular.
Messenger movie. A cellular is the
and
best.
And instead it gets bogged down at times. With
There's
like,
a whole, not the subplot, but the B plot is like, a woman has to bring
serious.
her Chinese woman is bringing her baby from China.
Right.
And that's the That's the package. It's not
it's
a spoiler.
It's like a little bit too serious. It involves, there's real things at stake. And we're like, no, I want to see the people ride the bikes.
I want to see it like fun. It's fun to watch the thing and the bike and the guy and break with his foot. Yeah, it's right, fun to see.
You want it to be the bicycle version of Gone in 60 Seconds, where in the first 10 minutes, okay, he's got to go from here to there. That's all the thinking you got to do. But I remember watching the trailer on television with my wife. And Michael Shannon says, I need that back. And Goofy says, once it's in the bag, you can't have it back. And my wife turned to me and said, that can't be true. So in
it's
reality,
a magic bag.
In reality, there's no movie. I need that back. Yes, sir.
Well, no, to be fair to Premium Rush, and I'm all about being fair to Premium Rush, Michael Shannon isn't the one who gave it to him in the first place.
Ah, see.
Had he given it to him and then said, hey, can I have that back? I think there would not have been a movie.
And I'm happy that Michael Shannon's getting work, and we talked about this briefly before the podcast. He's
a weird-looking guy.
He's a good actor, but in this movie, he's definitely... I feel like he's auditioning to be the villain in major Hollywood
motion pictures. I thought he was in the right movie. I thought the girls...
Well, the girls were just
horrible. In a bad series. They were like doing high school theater, and Michael Shannon knew how silly this movie was.
I think it could have gone even more, though, if it's going to be silly. He could have smashed mirrors with his fists.
I thought he was very silly. I thought he was incredibly
entertaining. It just seemed a little like he's almost channeling like a Jack Nicholson type character or something. I don't know.
And at the point where the three of us don't know.
That's it. Another summer in the books.
What's next summer? What's the big stuff coming
next,
out next summer?
I honestly have no idea. Superman.
Man of Steel.
Yeah.
Zack Snyder's Man of Steel.
I really don't know.
That might be the biggest thing.
Yeah. Comic book wise, I think that's
Thank
it.
God, because it's
too much.
In the column that appears not too often, the Doug asks Patrick questions about movies. It's all right there in the title of the column. I said, is this it for superhero? And it's like, this is the crux. This is the apex. This is it.
Yeah.
But if I could just throw out one more piece of...
it can't go anywhere but down, right? Yeah.
Mind stuff.
Brain meat?
Yes, brain meat. Delicious brain meat. That I think with Man of Steel, you're going to see something interesting because Batman has sort of ruled the roost for so long in terms of the tropes that it introduced. And I would suggest that Batman as a comic book is about darkness and deception and cynicism. Superman's the opposite of that. So will they attempt to do a cynical Superman, which won't work?
Yeah.
Or will the success of a genuine, sunny Superman signal the beginning of a new era in America?
I'd like to see that.
Hopefully the Avengers...
Does that speak also to the like DC versus... Oh, no, they're both Superman and Batman are both DC, right?
I just don't know how you can do cynical Superman. That's not what it is.
Right.
And I'm not even as big of a comic book guy as you.
Yeah. I don't know.
Red Tails, best movie of 2012.
Still a couple movies to look forward to in 2012, so the year's not a total wash. I didn't see a single thing that I absolutely am head over heels in love with so far this year, but we got a couple things.
Avengers,
still.
You weren't?
No.
Okay.
No.
But Patrick hasn't seen Paranorman yet.
That's right. There's hope yet.
And as we all know, hope springs.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, JB. Thank you, Battleship.
You're welcome.
And remember, you can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. See you guys soon. We'll be right back.